Mini episode 1849 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1849. You have with you here today two of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, myself, Rick Morris, and Ben Chu. And Ben is usually on in his capacity as FDH Hoops analyst, but today it is to review, spoiler-free, the movie Happy Gilmore 2, which was such a huge hit on Netflix, unsurprisingly so. And we're labeling this as a spoiler-free review in the sense that we're going to talk about a decent amount of the things that have happened. We're policing ourselves here that we're not going to ruin the experience for you. So if you've watched the movie and you want the deep dive on it, we're not really going to be getting into things because we think that there's probably still a bigger audience out there of people who haven't gotten a chance to watch this yet. We're not all Happy Gilmore obsessives who went to watch it the first weekend. Ben and I did, but there's a lot of folks out there that are casuals, maybe kind of happy curious or whatever. And like, I've heard good things about it, or I've heard some other things. And maybe we can balance out some of the bad reviews, because I've definitely got a very good review. And I think some of the bad reviews out there are very, very unreasonable. So, Ben, yeah, let's get into it here. That this is a movie that, again, of the many, many, many things you could say about it, it definitely is dripping with fan service start to finish.
Mm-hmm. I'm also, I apologize, Rick, I am mistaken. I thought this was the K-pop Demon Hunter spoiler-free review.
Oh!
It's okay, you know. I assume that's the Asian correspondent, you know, I've brought on for things like this. But
you'll adapt
on. No, I mean, Happy Gilmore 2, like, we saw too on top of it was Adam Sandler's most popular Netflix movie outside of Hubie Halloween, which was one of the first launches that he had with Netflix, so I felt like, and to get back to your original point, there was a fair amount of fan service, obviously, through this. But for the runtime it had, it built upon a prior story. And there were enough cameos, at least from the older casts, that it felt like, I wouldn't really say it. I feel like we would say it's a sequel. Mm-hmm. But it almost feels like it's more of like a flash forward more than anything.
Yeah, you could say that. And that's a thing where, and you talk about Hubie Halloween. As I was looking at Wikipedia to prepare for this here, I didn't even know about that movie, much less that Ben Stiller's Hal L character, which, again, I don't consider this to be a major spoiler. You will see him in Happy Gilmore, but that he was also in Hubie Halloween. And that's a movie where, again, there's a separate character that Adam Sandler plays in that movie. So it's, I'm always bemused by these things, like soap opera actors that show up, you know, in another role on the same show or anything like that. And nobody does the thing of like, hey, you look like so-and-so. So that's a little amusing to me that, that Hal L played opposite another Sandler character, but this movie, I mean,
big thing too, like Rick, I feel like this movie does get a little bit forgotten about because it was released by Netflix during the pandemic timeline.
Yeah.
And it was one of and as you can probably guess now, since it was the official release date was October 7th of 2020.
Okay.
Of course, it's going to be one of the more popular movies because we were all within that initial wave of the coronavirus pandemic. So
right.
Obviously the numbers are going to be really good if this movie got launched in 2020. So
oh, yeah. Yeah. And this movie, and it's interesting because, again, you just kind of picture it that, like, the effect that Happy Gilmore, the movie, had on pop culture. What's interesting is that you see that play out It's a meta kind of a thing here within the universe of Happy Gilmore in terms of like the golfers who came up who were like, oh, Happy, I watched you when I was growing up. Like it's a really interesting kind of a thing when in fact they in real lives were watching the Happy Gilmore movie and were influenced by it. So the effects that Happy Gilmore, the movie, had on pop culture, you see it reflected within the scope of the movie with Happy Gilmore, the character, interacting with all these folks who had come to be following him over the years in his career. And it's one of those things where I will say, and again, and I'm choosing my words carefully here so I don't get into spoilers, but it's a thing where Happy Gilmore at the end of the original movie is an ascendant character, and where you can just kind of see that, like, you know, the sky's the limit for him at this point, at that point. So it's a thing where I was picturing going into this here that this is going to be tonally very different, but they found a way to get it, to steer it back to the underdog story despite all of that, and a very decided underdog story at that, just as the first Happy Gilmore movie was. So they find a way to get it there. There are some developments that happen early on, one in particular that really kind of steers it there. I don't know that that was my favorite thing as far as just like what I would have liked to have seen as a viewer, but I think it was very compelling. It worked into it. And again, Happy Gilmore in this movie, as in the first movie, is the underdog that you're rooting for, notwithstanding his previous success.
I mean, on top of that too, Rick, if we're just going overall, like the original Happy Gilmore came out in 96, so...
Yep.
This is almost 20 years later. And the discussion point when Adam Sandler signed that Netflix deal was like, obviously, if you're a company like Netflix, you're acquiring most of his IP. And one of the movies that I felt like would be the most obvious would be Happy Gilmore, because
sure,
of the growth of the PGA Tour. We saw how popular Full Swing was on Netflix over the last couple of years. So it logically really made a lot of sense. And again, there's a lot of folks who, like, they love the first movie, who hate the second, and then there's also some people who are like, I'm seeing this for the first time overall. Because mm-hmm. I felt like the one thing that the movie did really well was, if you'd never watched the original Happy Gilmore, they gave mm-hmm. at least enough backstory during the entire runtime that you could at least understand what was going on.
That's true. And as far as a franchise that is completely separate from Happy Gilmore, it's a massive, massive coincidence at the very least, or maybe it's not because of the way that Hollywood recycles things here. But the fact that we are in the timeline presently where there's a reboot of the Naked Gun franchise that's out. You go back to the Naked Gun, you go back to Airplane, movies like that back in the day, 70s and 80s, and it's a very, very similar thing here as far as, like, there might have been a few celeb cameos in the first Happy Gilmore. This one's bursting at the seams. And a lot of it is famous people playing themselves. A lot of it is versions of themselves. A lot of it is famous people playing completely different characters, often in scene-stealing fashion. So it's that type of dynamic. So as far as Hollywood goes, you know, in a larger sense of everything that's old is new again, that's where, again, you're seeing this. I haven't seen the Naked Gun reboot. I'm not familiar with it, but I would guess that it's very much the same way, with probably these celeb cameos throughout here, just to kind of pique your attention as you're going through. Happy Gilmore, as I said, bursting at the seams with them, and they work in my estimation.
I mean, there was a lot outside of, you know, the normal acting crew, Rick. Obviously, Vern Lundquist, one of the legendary sportscasters, was brought back. I mean, if we just go through, because again, I know this is a spoiler for your view. I know your WWE head, Becky Lynch, made an appearance. We also
yes.
had
MJF.
Obviously, Bad Bunny, the famous rapper, had a relatively notable role as Happy's caddy for most of this timeline.
Yep.
And, you know, we saw Travis Kelce. We saw a bunch of golfers. Like, mm-hmm. And one of the big things that is so fascinating, Rick, is that when and I remember I read about Sandor and also Julie Bowen talking about this too as well, is that for the first version of Happy Gilmore, the PGA Tour was not exactly super excited to be in this movie.
Right.
Like, as we know, the only major golfer who appeared on camera in that was Lee Trevino. So
right.
It's a really interesting seeing guys like Jordan Spieth and, you know, Colin Makarawa mm-hmm. and then Scottie Scheffler made fun of his whole mm-hmm. scenario, which was really entertaining. And again, there was a bunch of other just random. So I don't want to give away the super fun cameos.
Right.
Because I feel like if I give away the super fun cameos, like they're going to be spoiled for people. So I don't want to do that just yet. But
right.
Obviously, this is also a timeline where, in I would say in the mid-90s, Rick, like just with the PGA Tour, like golf was on the radar for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I feel like as a lot of generations now are getting older, are getting much more into golf than it was in the 90s, because when it was in the 80s and 90s, it was very perceived as a sport that was like dominated by the elites at that period of time. Well, and now it almost feels like in the past Tiger Woods era,
yeah,
more people of all different ethnicities just overall are getting into golf more. We saw that too, just in terms of the ratings for the PGA Tour and LIV as well. So
yes,
golf in Happy Gilmore 2025 is a lot different from what Happy Gilmore was in 1996.
Yes. And again, Happy Gilmore coming out the year before Tiger really burst onto the scene on the PGA Tour. And that's where the Happy Gilmore movie was a bit prescient in terms of the rowdy fairway crowds and everything like that, because Tiger coming in was the first thing that really kind of, you know, I don't know if you would say necessarily like democratized the fan base a little bit, but it broadened it. It was more of a younger crowd that was coming in that was, you know, enraptured by him. So it's kind of funny in that there's a line in there where the Happy character is talking about at some point with Shooter McGavin, and there's a lot to be said about him that, you know, like, we were the biggest golfers of the 90s along with Tiger Woods. So it's kind of funny because, you know, again, that movie came out in a pre-Tiger universe, but the way that Tiger influenced the golf world over the last almost three decades runs parallel to how Happy Gilmore did, you know, in the fictionalized way, I believe.
Right. And I think, again, this is, if we disregard a lot of just things overall with this movie and the timeline, it's just more in terms of Happy Gilmore, at least from what Sam was saying, he built this in as an underdog story. And it's something that was very, again, if you look at the annals of sports movies, like,
mm-hmm.
we've seen this before. We saw it with Rudy. We saw it with the Brian Piccolo story. We saw, you know, where guys who have gone through a big level of issues and problems in their life extend to get to another thing. Mm-hmm. And also, too, like, this is arguably, if you are an Adam Sandler fan, this is the prime Sandler timeline. We're talking Happy Gilmore, we're talking Little Nicky, we're talking The Wedding Singer. So there are just so many movies in the Sandler lexicon, but this is some of his bigger work overall. And I feel like sort of the plot line for this movie had a little bit to do with what the current PGA Tour and LIV Golf are experiencing. Obviously, it's not a one-for-one, as we all know, but
yes,
it's a very interesting narrative that Happy Gilmore was an outsider coming yes. into more of a posh narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're moving more towards, we have these two entities. One is the old school, one is the new school. Mm-hmm. And it's very sort of indicative of what Sandler was trying to do with the first movie. But mm-hmm. I don't even think he thought it would get to that level with the second in this timeline.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is kind of ripped from the headlines. I will say there are nitpickers on Reddit who are looking at, in this movie, where the DeChambeau and Koepka characters line up, like, hey, what are they doing there? So there's people that are nitpicking the roles that are being played by some of the golfers in this. But this is a thing where, in terms of the media coverage of this as well, and there's a lot in terms of that they're showing as far as Happy Gilmore's comeback and the way that it's being covered by various podcasts and whatnot. I will ask you here for a moment, if you know, there's actually 2 degrees of separation from this movie. In the first Happy Gilmore movie, of course, we had Bob Barker on the show 7 times. There's 2 degrees of separation here. Do you know what they are?
I feel like I should know, but I do not want to make a fool of myself on this.
Okay. Here's a hint. FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Glassman. Does that narrow it down any?
A little bit, but I do not want to risk my.
All right. I'll let you off the hook here. So, Bob Glassman's, of course, very talented nephew, the actor and comedian Rick Glassman, who has many times been on podcasts with Andrew Santino and Bobby Lee. They do a lot of collaboration as well. So Santino and Lee show up doing podcast versions of their show covering this. It's also funny, too, seeing Dan Patrick playing a fictional sportscaster while we're at it with this movie as well. So these are little things here where, of course, none of these I consider to be spoilers as we're going along here. But in terms of this, and I will say also, too, that as far as folks that are in the movie here, there's characters that I did not realize until after I had seen the movie and gone on Wikipedia. I knew Sandler had a couple of his family members here in the movie, but the dance teacher for his daughter is played by one of his daughters. There's a member of the support group that he's in that he bonds with, who is one of his daughters. And then also his actual daughter in the movie is his blood daughter. So very interesting use of his own family in this as well. So he blends that in. He blends in, you know, so many different cameos and stuff. You talked before about some of the wrestling cameos. Of course, Maxwell Jacob Friedman doing a great job as Gordy in there, which again, you know, playing a jock type character, not going too far away from what he does in AEW, but doing an excellent job nonetheless. And for some of, I'm just going to say this, and again, and I'm going to keep this outside the realm of spoilers, but if you're thinking to yourself in terms of any of the great characters from the first movie, gee, it's a shame that the actor or actress playing them passed away, then you have things that evoke those characters, shall we say, at various points along the way, perhaps a relative or here and there. But the way that it's very, very creative how he goes and he does that, and he pays tribute to those characters and to the actors and actresses that cannot be a part of this movie here, whilst kind of keeping that involvement alive. A great job that he did in that regard.
And I mean, on top of that, too, it's like there were a huge amount of athlete cameos in this film, which in comparison to the first one was very limited. I felt like we've gone through a lot of them a lot, so I don't want to give away some of the ones who are more non-golf related at this period of timeline. And then there were, obviously, we mentioned Bad Bunny. I know there's another notable cameo in this that, as much as I'd love to talk about it, I don't, it's a spoiler for your view, you can't do it, but...
Okay.
I mean, the big thing, too, just in general overall, is that this movie, I will give them credit because I have seen, like, very split reviews where it's like, they built a world, they built a very convincing plot overall.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't feel, the one thing I will respect about this movie, too, is that it didn't feel like this was too long, Rick. There's many instances when someone does a sequel to a movie where you're like, we're just trying to add as many sort of like fan service narratives as possible. And it didn't feel like from beginning, there may have been like a small piece in the middle that was a little bit long, but it didn't feel like this was a movie that was like, we're going to add runtime to this just to keep people happy at the end of the day.
That's right. And it really is something where, again, just start to finish. I mean, it never bogs down because there's so many different directions to go in here as far as, the underdog story of Happy, and I'll leave it at that as far as what the nature of the underdog story is, but the way that it plays out, the journey that his character goes through, how the character is supported by his family, and then again, as he interacts with all these other folks along the way, and the interactions, and again, I think it's safe to say that, again, unless anybody had any kind of inside knowledge here, on what this was going to happen, the first interaction that you see in the course of the movie between Happy Gilmore and Shooter McGavin, I don't think anybody could have seen that one coming. And they go in a direction with Shooter McGavin that is very, very much, I think, unexpected based on what you might have thought coming out of the first movie, but I thought very, very welcome. And they take a chance going with it, but in the end, even though it may not be exactly what you think it's going to be, it's still fan service because of just how much this character has become a part of pop culture and people love celebrating the character.
Right, and we also saw with the Subway commercial, like obviously, mm-hmm. You know, that was a big thing. And we all know Christopher McDonald's one of the greatest character actors of all time in Hollywood. I don't think anyone's going to debate that at all. So, and again, like, just overall, like, again, there were some very fan service moments, but Shooter McGavin, like, as we all know, is probably one of the more interesting sports villains of all time. And it feels like, I wouldn't say it's a redemption arc, Rick, because a redemption arc is kind of like,
right,
you bring someone fully back, but this is more like,
Shooter's still Shooter. Yeah,
Shooter's still Shooter, but he's also just accepting what has happened to him over time.
Yes. He's
given the opportunity down the line.
Processed and digested things. And that's the thing, too. And this is, I think, somewhat reminiscent of, there was a recent profile on him, unsurprisingly, in The Ringer leading up to the movie coming out. And it was talking about this, like, something I've talked about on the show with actors and actresses is that you have a true handful of them that basically are great and can excel sort of across the spectrum doing all kinds of different things. I mean, Bryan Cranston, Meryl Streep, I mean, you can count them on basically probably two hands. The rest of the great actors in the world are ones that have a wheelhouse and excel in it. And this is, as that article made clear, like, Shooter McGavin is just, it's like the ultimate thing of what Christopher McDonald can do. Because I think I've said this to you before, watching Hacks, like, his casino boss character in Hacks, I think I said that to you one time, like, this is like an older version of Shooter McGavin. Like, he's just awesome at playing that kind of smarm and that kind of whatever. Like, he's just so good in doing it. And when you see him in a movie, you know what you're going to get out of him, and you know it's going to be awesome.
Right. And I mean, Christopher McDonald's had a legendary career. So I knew you mentioned Hacks. Like, obviously, he was nominated for a Primetime Emmy in that respect as well. And then also, like, he's done, if you really just look back at his career, he's done a lot of voice work. He's also done a lot of stuff with The Twilight Zone, Home Improvement. I would make the argument, and I feel like it's a weird argument to make, but he might be one of the more underrated actors in Hollywood, just for the breadth of stuff he has done in TV and movies just in general. And again, I know, too, he is a character actor on some level, but he's also done a lot of just general, he's had a long, long career, Rick, and I think we have to give credit for him, because I understand this, too. If he didn't want to do this movie, I get it entirely.
Sure.
Like, you're known for this character, but there's a lot of people within the Hollywood narrative that would literally say, like, I'm not coming back to do this film because I'm better than this. So you have to give him a lot of credit for doing that, and just also, you know, putting together, just, I'll give him credit, a very solid role just from start to finish.
Well, it's one of those things where there would be a lot of people that would be like, what are you talking about? You're giving him credit for realizing it's the break of a lifetime being in this role. I actually do, because there are so many actors and actresses out there like, don't typecast me. Don't call me Shooter McGavin when you see me in the airport. He loves it. Christopher McDonald, he understands what it's done for his career. And that, again, I mean, you think when they were casting for Hacks, you think they didn't take that into consideration? Like, you know who would be great? Christopher McDonald. Like, he's an older version now of, like, you know, like, what, you know, what the character was for, like, from the movie. Like, it has helped his career. Because, again, that's the whole thing. I've said it about Aaron Paul, watching him in The Path, a very, very great but unwatched show that was on Netflix. And it's like, he's playing, like, sort of an alternate universe version of Jesse Pinkman in there. And, like, that's most actors and actresses that are great have a wheelhouse. And it's not putting them down to say that, because it's so rare to be able to transcend that wheelhouse. It's no shame to be great at what you do. If you're great at what you do, then you're great no matter what. And it's just like, whenever you see Christopher McDonald, I agree with you, like, in any kind of a movie, like, it's not always going to be as reminiscent of Shooter McGavin as perhaps Hacks is, but generally speaking, you'll see some bleed through, and you'll just kind of, like, you just sit there and be entertained. He's just a very entertaining actor, and he plays great in this movie. And there's a number of folks that are and show up in the same way, and some folks that are not trained actors who do a very good job of, you know, you could say in some instances stealing scenes, and in some instances even going beyond that. And the journey that the movie takes you on, again, I sat down. I had no foreknowledge of this. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't reading any reviews or anything like that or anything to give me any kind of hint of what I was going to get. So I'm hoping that what we're telling people, we're giving them enough information to make a decision on whether to make the movie or not, while still, for the most part, keeping them in the bubble that I was in, because you'll enjoy it more if you don't know the plot turns. If you don't know, I mean, there's something very big that happens right off the bat. We're not going to tell you what it is, but it's like, as you see it unfold, it's one of those things. Again, I had no idea. And it's like, how are they going to take us on this journey?
Well, and also, too, I'll note, too, Rick, there was this whole discussion point about the, obviously, after, like, the perception from the primary is happy does well on the tour. So how is it going to cause this whole scenario? And obviously, I'm not going to spoil anything from that moment, but there has to be a part of it. And at some point, too, it's, you know, it's a, there is a sort of redemption story that we talk about in sports a lot. And we saw it we see it on the NBA and baseball and the NFL and the NHL. A guy who has had success early on his career and at the end is, you know, getting to realize his, you know, own accomplishments, but also what he has left for the game. And it's a very interesting. And I mean, also, it was discussed early on that there was going to be a moment in this film that is going to change Happy's trajectory. Mm-hmm. And it's really not surprising what it is ultimately. But it's also very interesting just in terms of overall plot of the movie. It's just how they built from one of the original ideas was apparently it was supposed to be Happy Gilmore goes on the senior tour.
Yeah.
And starts causing things. So now sort of the timeline where they're developing this film during the Live Golf scenario. And so it's an interesting time in the world of golf. And it's also one of the things, too, if we just talk about Netflix as a whole, is that as the most popular streaming service in the world right now, you're really trying to build sort of that legacy IP. And Happy Gilmore and Adam Sandler's legacy IP for sure.
Yeah. And I hadn't heard that there was potentially the way of doing it about the senior tour. This way is much better. I mean, this is really, it's ripped from the headline. Because you would have been chewing over a lot of the same food if you did it the other way. Like, oh, Happy's going to enliven the senior tour as he did the PGA tour. Which, again, that would, I don't think that would have been compelling. This was a much better direction to go. And it occurred to me, I had an observation I'm going to have to save for off air about the use of the Sandler daughters in this movie that I thought was kind of funny when I found out who the character, who the actresses were. I'm going to have to save that for off air because it would be a spoiler. It would pertain to the big spoiler of the movie. But it is something where, again, the ride that they take you on, the journey, they keep you as invested as they did in the first one. It evokes the movie a lot. I've seen complaints, they're like, oh well, there's so many flashbacks, like when they show you a thing here, they'll show you a flashback to the first movie. Yeah, again, I think people are playing Nelson nitpicker if they're gonna sit here and think that that detracts from it anyway, or like you're insulting us, you're spoon feeding us, like that to me is just some of the hipster stuff that you're gonna find on Reddit here from time to time, like I don't need to see this again to know that it happened. Like, in the course of the movie, I find that it works. It's entertaining. It helps kind of give more depth to what's happening in this movie. Like that's a complaint that I have no time for whatsoever. Them doing that.
Yeah, and I understand too, Rick. It's like, and again, too, there are the fans who love this movie. So they're like, why would we show these flashbacks? But you also have to realize on a streaming service like Netflix, there's a lot of people who never got to see the original movie. So you're providing additional context. So at the end of the day, I can never fault a movie for embedding flashbacks for a couple of minutes just to give everyone some sort of context.
Right.
In comparison to a movie that, let's say, like it's a sequel to something, and it gives no context. So if you're a new moviegoer watching the second film instead of the first, you're not going to be engaged. You're just not going to care at that period of time. So I understand the fans don't necessarily need that. But again, I also know Happy Gilmore, I hate to say it, Rick, it's a very niche movie timeline. It's not a mega studio franchise, despite what people say.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of these things here, too. When you talk about the first movie and this movie, I will give no spoilers whatsoever, but I got three words here for people. Will Zalatoris backstory. That was one I did not see coming. So it just the way that everything plays out, again, very inventive, very creative, a way to keep it fresh, I feel like, and again, to evoke the first movie in ways that work for this movie. I really felt like that was the case. And I really feel like, again, it's one of those things where, and as you watch it, I mean, that's one of the overarching kind of themes here, you know, as I was talking about a little bit earlier here, is the convergence of the meta versus the story that they're telling here, because of the effects of Happy Gilmore, the movie, on pop culture and the golf world and golfers who came up who were influenced by it. And you see now, because you talked about it before, Lee Trevino was the only one that was involved in the first one. This one, it's countless. The participation from the, because
at least if we're talking on the golf angle, there's at least 10 different cameos from
people. And like
whether it's past or present. I feel like, Rick, that's the most fascinating part of this scenario.
Yeah.
Because golf, at least perceptually when it was released in 96, it was still very country club, bro type narrative.
Yeah.
And like the upper crust of elites. And now golf in the post-Tiger era is completely different. Like, as someone who has a wide group of friends from a myriad of different things, what's the one of the first things they talk about the most? Not necessarily watching the PGA Tour live golf, but they are going to go play golf.
Right.
And I feel like that's the effect of this movie and Tiger Woods and that huge growth that golf saw in the early 2000s.
Yeah. And I mean, and if you want to trace that journey from the first movie to this one, and like I said, both in the meta sense movie, I think this was in the profile of Christopher McDonald that they did on The Ringer, where they were talking about this as he's meeting not just the biggest names of today, but some of the legends in there. And I think this was a thing from the profile that I read there. But like Jack Nicklaus, who, yes, has a cameo, a very great droll cameo from Jack Nicklaus. But like Jack Nicklaus meets him and starts doing the shooter. Like if you've got...
No, if Rick, you've got, you should have spoiled that. That was fun.
Well, I'm not saying that's what he does in the movie, but like off screen, he does the shoot. It's like if Christopher McDonald is getting greeted by Jack Nicklaus on the set doing a spontaneous shooter impression, that tells you everything about how Happy Gilmore shaped, you know, the consciousness of the golf world, pop culture.
And I think so. To one point I know we haven't talked about yet, but I do find it also interesting, is that I think a lot of people, especially at that time with Adam Sandler and doing a golf movie, I think a lot of people were probably scared at one point, Rick,
that he was going to make fun of the game.
Yeah. Of the sport.
Yeah.
And it's really just a sports underdog story at the end of the day. So if it was a, if it, in my opinion, this cannot be there has to be at least a handful of people who got into the game of golf because of this movie.
I can't imagine.
Because of that Adam Sandler has to be commended for that period.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine why they would have thought that. I mean, there was similar trepidation on the PBA tour when Kingpin came out. And certainly that didn't make fun of the sport. So, you know, what would make them think Happy Gilmore would do that? But, you know, you never know.
Bring that up because,
from
a movie that had very minimal cameos to a movie that has almost every notable athlete on the PGA Tour and legends from the PGA Tour. That's probably, in my opinion, the most interesting transition golf has seen, especially. And then, if we're just going to talk about Netflix as a whole, we've seen the growth of a lot of sports because of Netflix's documentary style, and a lot of these things. Like, we're in the same timeline too. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboys documentaries coming up. Like, we saw the last two seasons of America's Sweethearts, the Cowboys cheerleaders. We saw quarterback. We saw wide receiver. We saw the Formula One series. We saw what Netflix has been able to do with sports in a non-live format.
Yeah.
And I feel like Happy Gilmore 2 is a part of that on some level.
Well, and with this being the show where nothing is off topic, and frequently one show we do will have nothing to do with the next one, I can tell you the next one that's coming up, 1850, is going to be our review of the life and times of Hulk Hogan. And I do know that FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen wants to talk about, as one of the things coming out of that, the Unreal series on Netflix, which is their answer to the PGA documentary and, you know, the one on the big one on F1, I forget the name of it, but the one that made F1's popularity explode in the United States here. So, yes, I mean, that's a thing. I can actually plug that. If you have any, Drive to Survive. Yeah. So if you have any interest in hearing about, you know, a critique of Unreal, I haven't seen it yet, but Russ will have that in the next show that we're doing here. But, yeah, Netflix has always been very big in that space. They're big in the space, particularly where with entities like WWE, where they have Raw, domestically, Raw, SmackDown, and everything else internationally,
and,
including
and we also know too, Rick, obviously they got the NFL Christmas Day games, and
yeah,
with a lot of, again, I know the NBA is probably not going to be a big part of Netflix in this timeline, but with a lot of these sports rights coming up, we do have to consider that Netflix may want to wet their beak a little bit on, you know, we know Major League Baseball right now is going through a whole transition timeline,
with their
TV contracts, so. It would not shock me one bit if Netflix sort of gives a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to Major League Baseball and say, hey, can we get like five premier baseball games, or can we get a playoff game or wild card game at this point?
Yeah. And there's, you know, when you're going through the different cameos in here, I mean, Kelsey Plum being one of them here. So there are folks from all over the sports world that are involved here to where Netflix may.
Reggie Bush was also in it, you know.
Yeah. So there's any number. There's a lot of areas,
you know, because obviously, as we all know, Boban just needs to be in everything at this period.
Yes. So there's a lot of different sports that are
involved. We're not spoiling it with Boban. I think you're a Happy Gilmore fan, you know where we're going if you haven't watched this movie by now. But
you know exactly where we're going.
You know exactly where we're going, but it was still amazing, no matter what.
It is awesome that he ends up being in here. But this is one of these things where, again, with the participation from across the sports world here, that, like you said, some of the leagues of some of these athletes may become involved. Certainly in the years to come, Netflix probably looks to be a lot more involved with the WNBA. So Kelsey Plum being involved, this is probably a little bit of an Easter egg.
There's going to be opportunities for Netflix to bring these series together. Because what – at least during Ted Sarandos' timeline right now is helping with the content creation. The big thing they're always pushing is a documentary series, because it's that effect of, like, if you're not a sports fan, you can get into it. Mm-hmm. But if you are a sports fan, you're going to binge it no matter what you do anyway. So.
Right. Yeah. So that's, you know, and they count on the whole binge type of format for people to incorporate in their lives, for people to go ahead and do this. And there's any number of things that just, from watching the movie here, that you can just sort of learn incidentally that I didn't know. And this is an actress that I guess has a pretty good cult following, but there's a group of golfers that Happy Gilmore plays with here. One of the golfers is played by Margaret Qualley, who I did not know is the daughter of Andy McDowell. So yeah. I didn't know that she had a problem.
Also, if we're talking, I don't get to say this often, Rick, but we're in the Margaret Qualley era of all things.
Yeah. And I guess I'm
off the substance, you know, it's not surprising. So.
Yeah. So that's not somebody that was really on my radar that I learned about here. And then, you know, there's a couple of old favorites here. Kevin Nealon, Dennis Dugan reprising their roles from the original movie here.
I mean, one person I know where I don't want to spoil this, but we do get a Haley Joel Osment cameo.
I was just about to say, I was going to say, we're not going to tell you what it is, but it's like, you won't believe. You will not believe how.
Can I say one thing that I don't think will spoil anything?
He
plays a relatively major role in the second half of this film. So
he does, and it's one of those things where it's like if you're going into the movie and somebody was to tell you that Haley Joel Osment would be used in this way, you would not believe it. You really wouldn't believe it.
And I mean, will also give credence to him too, Rick. He did a fantastic.
Yeah, job. He did. Now, if somebody was to tell you how John Daly was being utilized, you'd be like, that checks. Okay.
That checks out.
But, yeah. But like Haley Joel Osment, not so much. And just how everything unfolded through the course of the movie, the creativity that was utilized in this to, like I said, evoke the best of the previous movie and filter it into this movie, and to be something where, again, at the end of the day, it's every bit as wild in terms of the structure and the format of the golf as you would expect it to be. I mean, suffice it to say that, like, what you saw at the end of the first movie, where he's having to hit more or less like the chip shot off of the fallen tower on the course and play it basically mini golf style, like that, you're going to see that and a lot more like that through the course of this movie with this new extreme golf that is coming up here in the form of this alternate league. So it really is something where
and we also have to say, Rick, the CEO of it, I don't want to spoil it for the people out there.
Yeah.
Don't want to spoil it, but it's a role we've never seen him play before. So it's going to be really interesting for some folks who are watching it for the first time, being like, wait, who is that? Really?
I had no idea. I didn't know,
and I was like, oh, man.
My first thought was that, like the way that they had him made up and everything like that, like, that is a character that, like, if they were to make him up a certain way, you could see Carrot Top in that role. My first thing was like, is that Carrot Top? So it was like, and then it was like clear that no, it wasn't him, but I didn't know exactly who until I really went on to Wikipedia afterwards.
Also,
but
we got to say for the people also, I know there's also there are two notable rapper cameos in this film. Two notable ones. So I don't want to spoil those because I feel like that's those spoiled too much, but
yeah,
I will say it, Rick, it was overall a fantastic film, but
yeah,
I think I lived for this movie to see Vern Lundquist cuss.
Yes.
It warmed my heart.
You got to see that. And that's where, and again, the primary difference I think between the two movies is, again, talking about that Happy Gilmore Two, you know, both the movie and then, you know, the universe that it exists in coming off of Happy Gilmore, you know, previously and being so influenced by it. And I'll just repeat what you said before. Lee Trevino, the only person from the golf world that was in it previously. But there were a couple folks in the first movie where it was like notable cameos. But as I said before, I just want to emphasize this again. This is so much in the vein of the classic Naked Gun, Airplane, whatever. Those movies that would be out where it would be sports figures or celebrities or famous actors or whatever the case may be doing these great cameos. Happy Gilmore avails itself of that because, again, there were, you can imagine the line was out the door of folks that wanted to participate in something like this. So they avail themselves of all of it. And it is in that classic spirit.
And sorry, Rick, if I'm cutting off.
No, I said it.
I think the big thing with this movie that it did well is like it did enough fan service, but it also did enough for someone who did not watch the first film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something, and again, we are now in the streaming era. So it feels like when I heard Happy Gilmore 2 was announced, I felt like when it comes out, this is going to be one of those times where, you know, going to sit down and enjoy this movie. I'm not expecting anything incredible from it. And I give them credit to the fact that this did not feel like, because we've seen it with sports sequels before where it's kind of like, you know, we kind of know the story, we kind of know the ending.
Yeah.
It did a very good job of not making you feel incredibly bored throughout. For sports sequel, which is really hard if you really think about it.
Absolutely. And I have to say, too, that, you know, that's one of those things where, again, for all the hipsters on Reddit that didn't like all of the literal callbacks of when they're showing the things on the screen, I never thought of it until you said it, but it's one of those things where they made it accessible. So if you're somebody that's checking out our show and you're like, I haven't seen the first one, am I really going to understand it? You will. I hadn't thought of that until Ben made that
point.
That's
why I feel like they deserve credit for that, because I've been in many scenarios in my life where I've watched a sequel of a movie.
Yeah.
And I have no clue what's going on movie one, and they never bring it up. So
yeah.
as a film viewer, it hurts you. And it also, one thing I will note, there was a lot of them, but it never felt like it was too intrusive, Rick. It didn't feel like, hey, we're going to do a 3-minute flashback right now to make sure you guys understand this entire scenario.
Yeah. And again, and I'm not somebody that, you know, complains just to complain. So I'll complain if I see things there that I don't like and whatever. And like, as far as like an emotional beat, there's, like I said, there's a big turn early on where it's like, I don't know if I, you know, like that in my heart of hearts. But I mean, as far as the storytelling, it really served the purpose. So I'm not going to complain about that because it served the story that they were telling. And that's the thing where, again, I feel like a lot of the complaints about the overdoing of fan service, too much direct evocation of the first movie, that feels like complaining just to complain, which ironically might be people's, you know, sense possibly listening to me in the next mini episode. I talk about Hulk Hogan's career, because I will get into a lot of things about Hulk Hogan that I think people are going to consider nitpicking, like work rate and everything else. But for this movie, I'm not the work rate guy. I'm the guy that, like, I was entertained. Two thumbs up.
Well, my thing too is that, and again, is this a perfect sports sequel? No, it's not. Let's just be honest, it is not.
Sure.
But was this something that you could sit down to and enjoy and not, like, stare at your phone when you were getting bored? Yeah. In my opinion, that's a pretty good movie in this timeline.
It is. It is. It checks those boxes. That's what needs to be done. And that's where, again, we are in concurrence on this, that this is a very, very strong movie, deserving of the success that it has had. And again, I can't help but think here at this point in time, am I getting greedy, but Happy Gilmore 3, dare we hope?
I mean, I know there's probably a handful of other movies that could get a reboot from Sandler, but I almost feel like of all the things, Happy Gilmore is one of those things that, since it is a sports franchise, it's a lot easier to churn out plots than say like Little Nicky 2 or like The Wedding Singer 2. Like, those are harder movies. Like, at least for 3, it's like, it's very obvious where they could go with that at the end of the day. So
yeah.
To me, it's like, if I'm Adam Sandler, this is arguably his most popular movie on the Netflix platform. The data now supports it. So if I was him, it would be fun to do another one of these. And again, too, like, it's also an opportunity for his family who did a very good, solid job acting in this film. So
they did.
And again, too, it's like, this is partially why, and we saw it with Shonda Rhimes, and we now see what I'm saying. I was like, why did they sign these Netflix deals? Because this is one of the big questions that was coming out during that timeline, Rick, was like, wait, why would you lock yourself into this?
Yeah.
Why would you give yourself flexibility? And now a lot of people are saying is that Netflix is now the premier streaming video service in America streaming service in the world outside of YouTube. So your reach is far past the world at this period of time. And we saw with both Adam Sandler and Shonda Rhimes with her success at Bridgerton that if you get a marquee series on Netflix, you're good. That is probably, you're going to reach more people in that way, or viewers, than ever before because of that.
Well, and that's where, and you know, you might not think that the name I'm about to evoke here has anything to do with what you just said, but it has a lot to do with it. I was reading a think piece right now, which you can't throw a dead rat on the internet without running into a Sidney Sweeney think piece. And this one in particular about all the endorsement deals that she does and everything like that. Like, oh, doesn't she worry about overexposure or whatever? But she has said, you know, the money these days isn't necessarily what you think it is, and particularly what you're paying out to your representation and everything like that. So to people making the career criticism of Adam Sandler, they're looking at it like you're limiting yourself in terms of the ceiling and everything like that. Adam Sandler made a very smart business decision by looking at the floor. Netflix is a very high floor for success, and he and Shonda Rhimes have proven that.
Yeah, and we're going to see many more people who are young directors and young actors who are going to make this sort of their platform because, well, let's just be honest, Rick, like, when we talk about, I know this isn't a streaming video episode, but when we talk about streaming video, what's the first thing everyone says? It's Netflix. Like, everyone either has it or knows someone who has it. And it's some, and we've seen it too with, like, just the growth of, like, foreign platform, Squid Game became an iconic brand because of that platform. So if you are someone in Hollywood, but unless you have like a prior partnership with another brand, Netflix is the place to go to reach the widest range of people in this period of time.
It is. It is. And that's the thing where, again, I think the decision that Adam Sandler made has aged very well, because you look at, well, what would this movie have done if it was in the theaters? I think it would have done outstanding, as opposed to the first Happy Gilmore that really snuck up on, you know, everybody. And it became a cult hit later on, but it was very sort of, as far as a movie that came out 3 years later, that's very similar as far as the appeal, very much like Office Space. It was something that, again, and maybe even The Big Lebowski, which came out right in between those two movies. Like, these are movies that, like, it took a while for them to gain that kind of currency.
And also, Rick, another point I do feel like I need to make is we're now getting into sort of the golden era of sports movies.
Yeah, we are.
Because there was a timeline, like, I remember, like, before Will Ferrell made Semi-Pro, where not a lot of studios would take risks on these comedy sports movies.
Right.
And now it feels like, with like the growth of the documentary field on Netflix and just within general, that sports comedy is very similar to like erotic thrillers are now coming back in the frame. And you have to give credit to Netflix for helping that. But because if those viewership numbers tell people want to watch it, they're going to watch it.
Well, yeah, that is absolutely the case. And the most fitting way for me to bring this thing all the way around is to cite my bona fides as a big Happy Gilmore fan. And that is, when I first bought my home, I had decided, like, let me see if I can, you know, maybe stretch this another month or two before I get cable. I was like, let me see. And then it was like, when I realized that out of boredom, I had probably watched Happy Gilmore like for a week in a row. And I was not laughing as much when I was watching Happy Gilmore because of the repetition. I'm like, yeah, I need to get cable. I need to work that into the mix. Yeah. So, you know, so yeah, you don't want to watch anything, no matter how much you love it, too many times in a row.
Great for your work. I know we're closing down, but Netflix right now is a far cry from the House of Cards era. And it's amazing to see what it's become in our lifetime.
It is. It is. And obviously, by the way, that was a pre-streaming era when I had Happy Gilmore and just a few other things to rely on in lieu of cable. But yes, no, Netflix, again, this is testament to their story as far as how they have grown as a platform. And that is something that we have covered through the course of our recurring mini series on the show here, covering the streaming industry, which I have to refer everybody back to the last one that we did here with Simon Applebaum. That is something where, again, you want to check that out. Our great friend, FDH Lounge dignitary Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Will Be Televised, a great talk about where Netflix is going along with a lot of these other platforms. But as is always the case, whatever we're breaking down with you on this show, Ben, usually it's basketball, sometimes it's streaming, sometimes it's TV or movie things that we're watching here. Always great doing it with you, my man. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1849.